of this time is twofold. First, it's a time to look inward, to examine our lives, our spiritual lives, to do some soul searching. How, God, how are you working in my life? God, where are you calling me to be? Are you calling me to do something different? These introspective questions about, God, how are you working in my life? The other purpose of this time is to also look outward, to discover what is God doing in the world, in my local community, in the people in around me, in all creation around me. So you might ask yourself, God, how are you calling me to help and serve my neighbors? Are there relationships, God, that you're calling me to tend to? Do you see signs of God's activity and promises in the world? How do you see God's people working for redemption, for salvation, for justice? I mean, these are big ideas about God, how God is working in the world. So this Advent, to do this reflective work, we are going to make our way through this series called Taste and See. And the idea is that we're going to be learning the stories of Advent through our five senses, so that with our whole being, the stories can become a part of us. You heard our storytellers today, who brilliantly, from their heart and souls, shared the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth. We also have a sense table out in the information area, out in the coffee area, and we brought that in here. If you had a chance to see it, our sense table had some peppermint to remind you of joy and to connect the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth with peppermint and candy canes. So each week we will have a sense station for you to use a variety of your different senses so that you can remember and take in the story. And we have a group of storytellers who have been studying and reading and reflecting on these stories for a number of weeks. And we hope that their retelling of these stories really has a positive impact that transforms your heart, that you begin to hear these stories in a new way, to take them in for yourself, that the stories become a part of your life and your everyday, and that they can speak to you so that you can see in a new way how God is working in your life and in the world around you. So let's read through this story together. During the rule of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest assigned service in the regiment of Abijah. His name was Zechariah. His wife was descended from the daughter of Aaron. Her name was Elizabeth. Together, they lived honorably before God, careful in keeping to the ways of the commandments, and enjoying a clear conscience before God. But they were childless, because Elizabeth could never conceive, and now they were quite old. So this story is set during the time of King Herod. Does anyone know anything about King Herod? You could think of a descriptive word for King Herod.
Not nasty.
Not nice. Nasty. Evil.
Roman puppet.
Roman puppet.
Insecure.
Insecure.
Threatened.
Vengeful.
Threatened.
Threatened. He was violent. He would get so paranoid. He actually killed most of the members of his own family. I mean, this is an evil, evil man. And the storyteller wants us to know that it is in the time of his rule and in Judea, the place where he is ruling, that this story is taking place. Almost to say that what is happening and what God is doing in the world is quite different from what Herod is doing in the world. We also learn that Zechariah is a priest of the regiment of Abijah. It's like saying he's from the second tier of priests. Or another way of saying this is like Sue. Sue is a pastor from like Washington, D.C. Joe is a pastor from Albertus. So Abijah is like saying, you know, the kind of second class, second tier, or married a priest. She comes from a long line of priestly families. So there's no surprises here that Zechariah and Elizabeth, the priest and the daughter of the priest, are married to each other, and they are the central people, the characters of this story. But there are certain characteristics about this couple that are put up front. One is that they are childless, and another is that they are blameless. Childless and blameless. I wonder why the storyteller tells us this. See, in their time, if a couple was not able to conceive a child, most likely the people around them would have shamed them. Zechariah and Elizabeth lived in a sin and shame culture, and not having a child would have brought shame upon them. The people would have thought they must have done something wrong, that they have been unable to conceive a child, especially a son. In their time, in their place, to have a son was so important because a son would carry on the family line. A son would also guarantee that they had someone to take care of them in their old age. So I wonder about this story because the storyteller is intent to tell us that this couple is blameless. Something different is happening in this story. Let's continue. It so happened that as Zechariah was carrying out his priestly duties before God, working his shift assigned to his regiment, it came his one turn in life to enter the sanctuary of God and burn incense. The congregation was gathered and praying outside the temple at the hour of the incense offering. Unannounced, an angel of God appeared just to the right of the altar of incense. Zechariah was paralyzed in fear. There are two times a year when one of the 24 orders of priests were assigned duty at the temple. So when your group of priests were called to temple, they would do a lottery. They would cast lots to see whose turn it would be to burn the incense. Once you had your opportunity, you would be removed from this lottery, never to do this again. This was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it was special. It was holy. It was set apart for you to be chosen to burn the incense. And so Zechariah's one chance, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity came up, and it was now his turn to go into the most sacred space in the temple, and it was his chance to burn the offering, the incense offering. So what he would have done is he would have walked in, and he would have burned the offering, and then he would have collected the dust from the altar, and then it would have been expected of him to come out to the crowd that was gathered, awaiting, and praying for this mighty and holy act to happen, and Zechariah would have walked out of the temple and he would have pronounced a blessing for the entire community. But that never happened. God interrupted the people's ceremony, and this moment is about to change everything. Let's read what happens next.
But the angel reassured him, "Don't fear, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Elizabeth, your wife, will bear a son by you. You are to be named John. You're going to leap like a gazelle for joy. And not only you, many will delight in his birth. He'll achieve great stature with God."
The angel announces, "Do not fear, Zechariah. Everything, it might be different, everything might be changed, but you are about to have a son." So I wonder in that moment, what had Zechariah been praying for all this time? He had been praying and waiting for a son. How long had he been praying? And is God acting now? The angel came and suddenly frightened him. I wonder what he must have been thinking to himself. An angel of the Lord? How is God acting in the world? What is God doing now? Could this be? What is going to happen? So what does Zechariah say next? Oh. I missed that part. the storytelling group, this is often the piece of the story that I left. So the angel tells us all about John and who he's going to be. Read this with me. He'll drink neither wine nor beer. He'll be filled with the Holy Spirit from the moment he leaves his mother's womb. He will turn away many sons and daughters of Israel back to their God. He will herald God's arrival in the style and strength of Elijah. Soft in the hearts of parents and children, and kindled without understanding among hardened skeptics. He'll get the people ready for God. These are the first words spoken in Luke's gospel. The angel saying, "Do not fear. Your prayer has been heard." The angel says, "You will have a son, and you will name him John, which means God is gracious. And many people will jump for joy, and he will bring great hope into the world. He will be of great stature, and God is doing something remarkable in him. God is acting in the world, changing hearts and lives. And he's going to bring great joy not only to this couple, but to all the world." So let's finish reading the story. Zechariah said to the angel, "Do you expect me to believe this? I'm an old man, and my wife is an old woman." But the angel said, "I am Gabriel, the sentinel of God, sent especially to bring you this glad news. But because you won't believe me, you'll be unable to say a word until the day of your son's birth. Every word I've spoken to you will come true on time, God's time." Can you imagine yourself as an older man who has prayed for years for a son, and now all this time has gone by, and an angel of the Lord has appeared to the right hand of the altar telling you that you will have a son? What would you respond? How would you react? No way.
Right.
What else? You've got to be kidding me, right? So, you also remember there was a crowd outside waiting? Now remember, they thought that Zechariah was still inside the temple, that he was carrying out his priestly duty, but could you imagine, he's in there, he's having an encounter with an angel, he's taken a long time. They're still waiting out there because they're anticipating a blessing. Suddenly, Zechariah emerges. And he can't say a word. He can't give them their blessing. Something extraordinary must have happened. They knew in that moment he must have had an encounter with the divine. Now, can you imagine him going home to tell his wife, Elizabeth, without saying a word? Let's finish the story.
While the congregation was waiting for Zechariah, he was getting restless, wondering what was keeping him so long in the sanctuary. When he came out and he couldn't speak, they knew he had seen a vision. He continued speechless and had to use sign language with the people. And when the course of his priestly assignment was completed, he went back home. It wasn't long before his wife Elizabeth conceived. She went on by herself for 5 months, relishing her pregnancy. So this is how God acts to remedy my unfortunate condition, she said.
Can you imagine yourself in Zechariah's shoes, not being able to say a word to his wife? Can you imagine yourself as Elizabeth, after years of trying to conceive, now in her old age, she becomes pregnant? And she went off by herself for 5 months. Why do you think she went off for 5 months? Do you think anyone know she was pregnant? But after 5 months, she would have been showing. How do you imagine she would have felt in her body, in her mind, in her heart? I imagine her laughing with great irony, great joy for the amazing things that God is doing. For me, this story reminds me that when all hope seems lost, when I'm about ready to give up, when I am at my wit's end and feel like I am hanging on by my fingernails, God does the unexpected. God is consistent with that, by the way. This is a story of great joy for anyone who's grieving, who is doubting themselves, who is wondering if God is working in the world. This is a story for you. This is a story that reminds us that God is acting in amazing ways in the world. All we need to do is hold on to our hope and remember that God has tremendous joy.